It has been reported that among the people attending will be the sovereign citizen's wife who was shot and killed. That is defamation of character, of my character, of Jeanette's character, of Tara's character, of David Justice's character, the other five people that helped me bring her here, and everyone that attended. And I am furious.
Well, let's get down to the specifics as to the defamation. The term sovereign citizen is what is of concern here. And as I said, the FBI, if you go onto its website, it has a domestic terrorism page. And inside this page, there's another page that describes sovereign citizens. And it goes into particular detail, lumping everyone that, well, basically it profiles people that are dangerous. Basically dangerous in that sovereign citizens kill people. I think it would rise to the level of Black Lives Matter, only sovereign citizens would be people that are conspiring to kill government people. So when a government or whoever this guy is would send a memo out and suggest that the 100 people that were meeting there that night was a group of sovereign citizens, that's rather extreme to label a group of people that are just meeting as an extremist group that has an agenda to overthrow the government, an anti-government group. And I think, is that what your outrage is, Barbara?
Yes, absolutely.
Now,
and
let's tie Southern Poverty Law Center into this, because you've mentioned them. Southern Poverty Law Center is a group that has been around since about 1971 or so. And they were a group that initially took on civil rights lawsuits and was successful. And somehow they've become, and I'm going to put this in quotes, an authority on hate groups in America. And so what's interesting, and what I'm intrigued by relative to Southern Poverty Law Center, is how did they become an authority, and how is it that they're looked to by the FBI? Who are they that they get to decide who is and who isn't a hate group in America? Black Lives Matter is not on their list. And they've created this ambiguous group called Sovereign Citizens. And it appears that, you know, if you look through their website and look at individuals that they've listed, you know, Pat Buchanan, I don't know if he's on their list, but people of anyone that is taking a stand and defending the Constitution or championing the principles of American, fundamental principles of American law, appears to end up on their list. Barb?
Yeah.
Barb, when did this happen? And did you confront the city manager about it?
Absolutely. I have been to the sheriff. I have been to city council. Not just me. I don't dare mention the other people until I have permission to mention them. I can mention Rosemary Anderson and Bev Watts because we made the front page of the paper after we took it to city council. But we're on the front page of the Delta County Independent.
What does the story reflect?
Well, Pat Sunderland did a very good job of, I started with defining sovereign from the Declaration of Independence. And then I read the memo and went into how they're labeling us. Rosemary came up behind me with the power of words and read from the FBI website what they are defining sovereign citizen group as. Am I making sense or am I just rambling?
No, you're making sense. So you got wind of this. You went to the meeting, but was the city manager?
We didn't get wind of it until 10 days after the event. And then I did an open records request to substantiate the rumor.
Wow.
Lo and behold, it's true. And so we went to city council to address the elected officials as Mr. Torgler is administrative. He's not elected. He's away from the people. And where did this come from? That's what I want to know. Why? And this happened on June 28th. Our event wasn't until July 6th. Who notified the Delta Police Department, the Sheriff's Department, and the State Patrol that there were dangerous people meeting at the fireside on July 6th? They didn't just dream this up and, oh, gee, you know, there's a meeting of dangerous people. Where did it come from?
I've got the FBI website up here on the internet. This is a page called Domestic Terrorism, subheading the Sovereign Citizen Movement. And it goes on to say, domestic terrorism, Americans attacking Americans because of U.S.-based extremist ideologies, comes in many forms in our post-9/11 world. To help educate the public, we've previously outlined two separate domestic terror threats: eco-terrorists, animal rights extremists, and lone offenders. Today, we look at a third threat, the sovereign citizen extremist movement. Sovereign citizens are anti-government extremists who believe that even though they physically reside in this country, they are separate or sovereign from the United States. As a result, they believe they don't have to answer to any government authority, including courts, taxing entities, motor vehicle departments, or law enforcement. This causes all kinds of problems and crimes. It goes on. That's just the beginning. Not every action taken in the name of sovereign citizen ideology is a crime, but the list of illegal actions committed by these groups, cells, individuals is extensive and puts them squarely on our radar. In addition to the above, sovereign citizens commit murder and physical assault, threaten judges, law enforcement professionals, government personnel, impersonate police officers and diplomats, use fake currency, passports, license plate, and driver's licenses, and engineer various white-collar scams, including mortgage fraud and so-called redemption schemes. Now, it goes into even more particular detail, but what I hear Barbara's concern is to take the broad brush, and because Ryan Bundy and Ammon took a stand the way they did, and Cliven, and because Lavoie Finicum took a stand the way he did, suddenly they're included in this group, and because we had a meeting where we heard his wife tell her story, that someone inside the government would paint the brush and put all of us into this category is a defamation of character.
Well, that is libelous, sounds like.
Well, it's very dangerous, too.
Have you, Barb, confronted the city manager?
Oh, yes.
And why did he do that?
They won't say, but we can assume, just like they're coming in, rather than attend and learn, they want to assume what we're talking about.
They were welcome to come in.
They were welcome to come in. We always invite, always.
That is.
And they never come in. They just want to believe how they're trained by this retired ATF gentleman, James Kavanaugh. And you can darn well bet, and it is so familiar, watching that anti-government YouTube with James Kavanaugh and what is happening to me, Rosemary, Bev, that is exactly what happened to us. They are training our police officers. They are training our sheriffs because that is exactly what happened to us. And it is defamation of character.
They're programming a fear-based response to anyone that would challenge government policy, government actions. You know, I've been accused many times of being anti-government. I'm definitely been associated with the sovereign citizen movement. It came out in my trial. it came out, if you look at the grand jury indictment, one of the intents that they imputed to me inside this grand jury proceeding was that I was a sovereign citizen, and that my motive was because I was anti-BLM, which is the furthest thing from the truth, and yet that's a representation that was made to the grand jury.
They jumped to conclusions.
The representation that is being made of Ryan, of Ammon, and all those prisoners that are sitting in there, they don't even have anything on them. The piece of evidence that Ryan is holding inside him, they want so that they can get rid of it. Jeanette has never seen her truck, LaVoy's truck. They won't release it to the insurance company. They won't even release it to her attorneys. And now they're after the bullet that is in Ryan that he received before LaVoy was killed.
So I'm intrigued. So the reason that bullet's in Ryan is because he's chosen from the beginning not to let them take it out.
Not to let them take it.
For evidence reasons.
It's his evidence.
Wow.
So let's step back and look at a bigger scope, a bigger picture in all this. Someone's hiding something, or someone's afraid of something. And it appears the FBI, who is labeling, along with Southern Poverty Law Center, people that have the audacity to challenge the government using the law or using certain tools, are immediately pigeonholed, demonized, and painted as an anti-government extremist.
Right. But if you were all a bunch of Muslims advocating for Sharia law, they wouldn't have said anything.
Or if I was one Muslim that went down and committed some murders in Dallas, you know, Obama would stand up and say, don't judge all Muslims by the actions of one.
Yeah.
but here we've got a situation where here's one of their favorites is you're a constitutionalist. Well, what part of the Constitution do you have a problem with? You know, so anyone that exercises their rights or knows a little bit about the law is suddenly an extremist, a dangerous terrorist, potential domestic terrorist because they have knowledge. Where Black Lives Matter people who've come out and openly advocated the killing of cops, they're not on the hate list. So we have a real dichotomy going on here.
Wow.
Here's another thing. Richard Mack sued Southern Poverty Law School for defamation of character.
He was on one of their lists as a domestic terrorist, potential domestic terrorist. Richard Mack was the sheriff that refused to enforce the Brady Bill because it was a policy and he wasn't being funded. He took it to the Supreme Court and won. And the Supreme Court held he didn't have to uphold as a sheriff, was not obligated to uphold the principles of the Brady Bill in his county.
Hmm.
Correct, Barb?
Correct. Correct. Never mind. It left me.
Did he? How did his lawsuit fare?
He won. With Southern Poverty Law School, that I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know how that he fared in that. But the fact is that I want everyone to understand that is where the training is coming from.
You know, have you ever heard of David Barton? David Barton is on Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group list.
Yeah, I watched his video a long time ago. I got to hit the news. But Barb, what did the city councilor say to you?
Nothing.
Was it just...
He got red-faced and he said, where on there did I call you dangerous? And I said, Rosemary will come up behind me and explain. And he didn't say anything. But you have to remember, we did it through public comment.
Right.
And they don't have to say anything. But he wanted to defend himself. But it's beyond defending. I have all the evidence. Mm-hmm. He was wrong.
Well,
whoever encouraged them to go along with this, and they did. Without knowing us.
Inherent in the accusation of sovereign citizen was the inherent accusation of dangerous.
Yes. Now, all you have to do is go on the FBI website, and you've been reading from it, David, and you can clearly see what they did to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, but hit the news.
Interesting. Very interesting. I got to run, Barb.
Bye.
Feel free to call back. Boy, that's terrible. That's terrible. You know, Black Lives Matter. What do they say? Roast this pig. I mean, they say some nasty things about police officers. Muslims meet all the time. Everyone's oblivious to that. You can't say anything about it. You're a racist. But here, oh, it's different. I mean, sovereign citizens, to me, that just means a citizen who's informed.
Well, to take the term and label it and redefine it and then like I said, alter it into a domestic terrorist group is a very irresponsible thing the FBI has done.
More phone calls coming up. David Justice is here. 839 AM 580 KUBC. Good morning. My name is Dan. David Justice is here. I was telling David about the Orlando shooter's father who attended a Clinton rally in Kissimmee, Florida, a couple of days ago. A week ago, maybe now. The Clinton campaign denied knowing about his presence. But I thought it was rather strange since the Orlando shooting just happened.
Yeah, that's a peculiar circumstance. We live in a day of peculiar circumstances, you know, where everything's shocking. There's so many shocking. ISIS, you know, now Trump's going to take the position, you know, that Obama created ISIS. What an interesting thing to put on the table.
Well, I think they did create ISIS. They certainly created that void. I mean, the idiots in the Bush White House and the Trump White, or in the Obama White House have this penchant, David, for removing jerk dictators like Saddam and Muammar and creating this void to allow radical Islamic groups to take over.
Well, you know,
and Putin and Saddam and Muammar, they're jerks, they're killers, they're liars. But you can somewhat work with them. You can work with them. Saddam used to hire a lot of Christians to work in the government. And the reason he did that is, and he admitted this, he said that he could trust them. he liked doing business with Christians because they were trustworthy. Huh, what a concept, Saddam Hussein. I mean, he was a Soviet. He lived in palaces. He had a new hooker every night of the week. He's like Obama. They're Soviet types. They're not Muslims. But anyway. Hi, you're on with David Justice. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dan and David. How are you guys today?
Swell, thanks.
Good deal. I'm going to reference that bottom of the news hour report just a second ago where they were saying that blacks are so much further behind white folks in the economic development, and the key word that they used there was that under the current policies, I believe they said it would take 280 years for the black population to achieve the same level of economic prosperity as the non-black population. The current administration is responsible for the current policies, and so all of this stuff about equality and making things right, why hasn't Obama's administration done anything to correct that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather damning on their part, or on the part of the administration, rather damning of the administration, to say that blacks are, you know, take 280 years under Obama's policies to recover.
David, and it's funny you brought that up, because David and I were laughing about that news story and what a silly study that was. I mean, Democrats have ruled Chicago since 1931. I mean, how's that worked out for black people?
Yeah, exactly. And just a real quick passing note, too. If anyone thinks that the Hillary campaign didn't know that gentleman was behind her or in the audience, they're out of their minds, because the CIA and the FBI and everyone else and Secret Service, they're not going to be letting people behind her that they don't know exactly who they are. that's probably the most unsecured position in a presidential campaign rally of any sort, is having a crowd of people behind the candidate, and for them to suggest that they had no idea he was there, everyone in the security services knew exactly who he was, and I'm sure the campaign approved him being back there.
Why would that? What is their rationale for doing that? Because that even for a Democrat who's trying to win office, that would surprise me.
Well, you know, when they're trying to be all-inclusive and not condemn any particular group for their terrorist activities, or, you know, just come across as the party of reconciliation and reaching across the aisle, I think it's a perfect move on their part to demonstrate that they didn't hold any grudges against someone who was an Islamic terrorist who had points of view against gay people that were malicious and murderous, and he carried those points of view out. And the father, who has come out supporting what his son did, I think it's a message from the Hillary campaign that they're supporting that sort of malicious, murderous activity on the part of Islamic terrorists.
the Hillary campaign thinks that will help them win an election?
I think they're suggesting, or it would be suggesting, that it's reaching across the aisle for unity, you know, as like making nuclear deals with Iran, is supposedly to reach across the aisle and be the better party.
Hmm.
So it's consistent with the administration's working with terrorist groups, working with groups that are anti-United States of America. It's a consistent policy if you look deep into the policies of the administration and what Hillary Clinton did as Secretary of State.
Yeah, I mean, I know Hillary is anti-U.S., and I know Barack is anti-U.S., and they're against Americanism, but I didn't know that they wanted everyone else to know that. You know, I mean, they want us to think that they are for free enterprise. And they,
I don't know that they're going to wave a big flag to say, yeah, we did this on purpose, but I think it sends a message to the people who are in that campaign and supporters of Hillary to certify and verify her support of that type of reaching across the aisle, for lack of a better description. Again, I'll just say it. If they can't begin to convince anybody that they didn't know that gentleman was in the back of behind her in that crowd. I mean, talk about strategically placed. He could have been anywhere in that field of view or in that grandstand behind her and never be seen, but he was exactly where the cameras wanted him to be.
Got it. All right. Thank you.
You guys have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Let's talk about the... there are blue states that are going to go for Hillary no matter what. She could kill someone on camera. They could show it on the news. They're still going to vote for her. There are a lot of Democrat zombie brainwashed people. And then there are a lot of red states. So going in, David, we know that Hillary will have 217 Electoral College votes and Trump will have 191, but it's those battleground states like this one in Pennsylvania and Ohio. I mean, do you think he has a shot? Do you think he has a shot working against the media onslaught, relentless, and Hillary?
I think the unseen hand that is behind the destabilization of the East has chosen Hillary Clinton to be president. And I think Trump, who came out and acknowledged that he believes, as I do, that the elections are rigged, knows, as we spoke last week, that he doesn't have a chance to win. Which puts him into a position of being able to say things that he might not otherwise say, you know, for fear of losing political points. So it puts him into an interesting position to be able to tell the truth and run a campaign based on truth rather than politics, which is clearly what Hillary's all about, is running an election based on politics, because She has an agenda. You know, if anybody's listening to this conversation, I don't see how they couldn't help but be confused. We talk about Ryan Bundy in the beginning. We talk about anti-government. And then you come along and mention that Hillary and Obama are clearly anti-U.S. What is... And Trump, he's running a campaign on Make America Great Again. What a time to wake up into a world of politics and begin to see the confusion out there. And I think when Hillary was exonerated by the FBI, and that just added to the total confusion. What is America, and who is against it? Who is for it? What does it mean to be American? Why are we being force-fed the notion that contaminating an ideology is going to make it better? And that ideology is freedom. Freedom is an ideology. It's a philosophy. Security and communism and statism and fascism, that's another philosophy. And it seems to me that the direction that Hillary is going with her campaign is moving toward total diversity and total desegregation of ideals and
multiculturalism.
And the end result of that is complete chaos, which is exactly the platform that statism needs to rise. It's exactly the platform that fascism, that communism all depend on to thrive. It's the basis for totalitarian dictatorship. It is the definition of absolute despotism. Absolute despotism. And it's interesting to wake up into a world where it seems like we can't get there fast enough. And we're okay with that as a people. Well, we're not really okay with it, but we really don't know how to combat against it. What do you say to that? You know, we sit in front of the TV in absolute astonishment at this latest revelation that you brought forward about the Orlando shooter's father sitting right behind Hillary during her campaign speech. You know, this is insanity.
What do the families of those victims think when they see that? I mean, that should be... Can you imagine if that would have happened to Donald Trump? If Mr. Mateen would have been sitting behind Donald Trump at a speech? They'd still be talking about it. It would be wall-to-wall coverage.
So what's the objective in all this? If not to sow seeds of discontent and confusion. We can look at the outcome. Let's look at the outcome of this. How is it not more confusion? How do we not have political confusion? How do we not have political anarchy going on in this country? And how is that not anti-government? So the very people that are accusing people that study the principles of American law of being anti-government are themselves rebelling from the principles of stable, lawful government.
Mm-hmm.
By pigeonholing people like Ammon and Ryan, who took a stand in principle. Now, we might not agree with the stand they took, but they decided to take a stand to call attention to an injustice relative to law and order, which was really the intention of Ammon, to call attention to the Hammonds' illegal rearrest and the resentencing of them after they had already served their time, and to call attention to the overreach of the land management agencies, which is in itself, they were using the Meher wildlife thing as a platform to call attention to usurpation and abuse of power. So it's not that they're anti-government. they were using a platform to call attention to government crime, or they were using a platform to call attention to government overreach, to government usurpation. But so to label them anti-government is really a non sequitur. And yet that's mm-hmm. what they've been labeled. And that's what now we've been labeled because we attended a meeting in Delta where we had the wife of a murdered man who, again, had written a book and was championing certain principles of fundamental American law. The man wasn't anti-government. He was very pro-government. He was very pro-America. And yet the establishment is now labeling people like him and Ammon and Cliven and others like us, even having this conversation, mm-hmm. Anti-government. What is going on in the world if not the destabilization of a government here in America?
Well, the globalists use Hillary as... Hillary is their pawn. The globalists of the Bush, Clinton, Obama years. And they are taking... Not only are Hillary and the Democrats attacking Trump, the media is attacking Trump, but the globalists of the Clinton, Bush, and Obama years are trying to railroad Donald Trump. The uber rich.
The institution.
Hello, good morning.
Yeah, you know, ever since Dave and I were at the Continental Congress in 2009, and I was a delegate there, the way I look at what we're up against today is the American people are like an elephant in a circus. You take an elephant when he's little, and you can force him and train him and get him to where he'll make a fool out of himself out in a circus ring, stand on boxes and rear up and sit on his butt and do anything that the trainer tells him to do. When any time the elephant could reach down and just smash the trainer like an eggshell. And that's what's happened in the last 90 years in this country is they've taken our kids away from us and they put them in them public schools and they've dumbed them down and trained them to do whatever they're told. And that's why if you mention the Constitution, either one of them, state or federal, and start talking about sovereignty, these politicians should be brought up on the carpet about who's sovereign in this country, but nobody wants to do it. It's all right there. It's all written down, who's sovereign. But now if you claim your sovereignty, you're some kind of, they know they've got to shut you up and get rid of you. Just like those people last year that was over in Denver handing out informed jury pamphlets, which all you have to do is read what Thomas Jefferson and a few of the people said about why we have jury trials. They were arrested for jury tampering, for telling people that they had more power than the judge did sitting in the seat.
Mm.
And that all started in the school system. That all started in the school system. That's why we fought tooth and nail for 10 years trying to get people involved in standing up for their freedom and their constitutional law, and we could never get more than a handful of people. And it's because the school system has trained them like elephants in a circus to do what they're told. And I guess that's all I got to say. Mm,
good take. Thank you. Go ahead, David.
Well, the problem is spin and story. And this is why I love law, because I love order. And I like to have my mind in order, and I use law to that end. And I'm an engineer. My dad was an engineer. You know, science, math, these are engineering sciences, and the end result is order. And when you apply this to politics and government, and economics, we should have an ordered society. But when we deviate from law, we get into story, we get into spin, we get into lies. And then it becomes about bullying and force, and it becomes about control. So we've got order versus control. We've got law versus relativism. So in today, those two ideologies are at war with each other. And this is really what's going on. There's a battle for our minds. And in the end, I think the only thing that we have in our corner is to fall in love with the principles of law and order and stand on those, no matter what the cost is.
News is next
on AM 580, KUBC, Montrose.